This is Bob Starr.
This is the time and place for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. This is Tuesday, May 24th, 2005. It's 9:30 a.m. We're at the State Capitol Building in room 412 in Pierce, South Dakota. With me today, my name is Gary Hansen. With me today is Dusty Johnson. Joining us by phone is Commissioner Bob Starr. And also on the phone, we have Colleen Savold.
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Melissa Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Larry Nelson. Denny Law.
I also have George.
No. All right. Dennis, would you speak up a bit? You're just very, very faint to us here.
Thank you. I'm here, Mr. Chairman, and I also have George Strandell with me.
Thank you. Tal Wysorek.
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Ron Spangler.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And has Larry Nelson joined us? Then we'll begin with administrative item number one, approval of the minutes commission meetings held on May 10th. Is there a motion?
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
I will second.
Can I concur?
Consumer issues. Today, Mr. Jim Melhoff is with his spouse, and they are expecting a child, so he has decided that's a little bit more important than telling us how many complaints we've had. So Sarah Greff will explain that to us.
The commission has received a total of 654 consumer contacts during 2005. 50 of these contacts have been received since the last report was prepared for the May 10th, 2005 commission meeting. 18 of the contacts for this period involved telecommunication services. 4 of the contacts involve electrical services. 7 contacts involve natural gas services. 3 contacts involve gas and electric services, 5 contacts involve cellular phone service, 6 contacts were related to the Do Not Call registry, and 7 contacts involve miscellaneous items not regulated by the PUC. 547 of the 654 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved, and 2,072 of the 2,370 contacts received in 2004 have been resolved.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? If not, second item is CT05-001 in the matter of the complaint filed by WWC License LLC against Golden West Telecommunications Cooperative, Inc., Vivian Telephone Company, Sioux Valley Telephone Company, Armor Independent Telephone Company, Bridgewater, Canastota Independent Telephone Company, and Kadoka Telephone Company regarding intercarrier billings. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant the motion for partial summary judgment? There are also some other questions that the commission will need to rule on. Specifically, does the commission have jurisdiction on this issue? We are here to listen to the plaintiffs and the parties. Who is going first here?
Mr. Chairman, this is Tal Wysorek on behalf of WWC. Since I'm the moving party, assuming I'd go first, unless somebody has objections or wants to take them in a different order.
No, go right ahead, Tal.
This is our motion, and it's a partial summary judgment, meaning it won't dispose of all issues, but I think there's some issues that, by the pleadings, can be disposed of immediately to move forward. And what we did is we made a partial summary judgment to deal with three issues, one being whether this commission has jurisdiction to hear the complaint WWC filed. The second, whether the commission should order payment of the undisputed amount at this time, and the third being whether interest is available. Now, the reason these come up, when we filed the complaint, in the answer, the Golden West companies, and I'm going to refer to them as just the Golden West companies, that's okay, raised in a joint answer a jurisdictional question. They cited to a couple of electrical cases. Now, we thought it prudent to deal with the jurisdictional issue up front because if this commission for some reason feels it doesn't have jurisdiction, there's no sense of going through a lot of procedural or discovery issues. Our brief is fairly succinct on it. The electrical cases that the Golden West companies rely on, there's not a similar set of statutes for the procedure on complaints that are found in the code under Chapter 4913 as exists for telecommunications. That's what we brought the complaint under. And if you look at those statutes, specifically 4913.14, 14.1, those give you very broad power as a commission to determine issues such as what we've asserted here, and that is, look, we've overpaid a substantial sum while we're negotiating this interconnection agreement, and we should be paid back that money immediately. For those reasons, I believe jurisdiction is fairly clear under the statute, and the commission has jurisdiction to go forward. I would point out in the brief of the Golden West companies that was filed last Friday, it does appear Golden West does admit there's jurisdiction at least to the extent that Golden West counterclaim asserts an interpretation or an enforcement of the interconnection agreement. Now, on this overpayment issue, there is some argument as to whether that's part of the agreement, because the overpayments weren't specifically addressed in the interconnection agreement, but the overpayments ended up in that we paid under the old rate while we negotiated the interconnection agreement. Once you approve the interconnection agreement, our argument is we're clearly entitled to a refund of that overpayment, and that should be done immediately. Somebody might dispute whether that overpayment is part of the interconnection agreement or the interconnection agreement is just used to establish the amount. But in any case, under Chapter 4913, I believe this commission has jurisdiction to determine whether we're owed money back. The second issue is the payment issue. In this case, there's been a letter attached to the complaint as Exhibit C, signed by Mr. Law on behalf of the Golden West Companies. In that letter, dated December 1st, 2004, Golden West Companies go through and say, yeah, you've overpaid us, and here's the amount. We're just going to credit you. In their answer, the Golden West Companies admit to that letter being the amount that, as of that date, that constitutes the overpayment. What we're asking today is that the commission order those amounts be immediately repaid, less any credits they've given us since December 1. Reason being is this. That is a substantial chunk of money that they have acknowledged, the Golden West Companies have acknowledged we've overpaid. It's in excess of $500,000. Now, we believe we're owed even more, but if they've stood up and admitted that they owe us $500,000, they should pay us the $500,000 and not take the position that we don't have to pay you the $500,000 until we figure out and force you to the table, WWC, to negotiate this inter-MTA issue. And that's essentially what they've taken in their brief. They've taken the position that, look, we think they owe us more money in inter-MTA, so we can hold on to this $500,000 that we admit that we owe them until we negotiate inter-MTA. That's not equitable, it's not fair, it's not appropriate. Now, in their brief, Golden West Companies take the position, look, we have to figure out all the monies owed under the interconnection agreement before we have to pay anybody back. I disagree with their analysis on the case law. The case law they cite are like foreclosure cases where the contract is completely finished, or in foreclosure where payments aren't being made at all. In this case, you have an interconnection agreement that still runs throughout this year. But we're not going to be totally done with this contract until essentially we renegotiate a new contract. If you take Golden West Company's position, they would argue that, look, we have to fulfill all these contracts before anybody can claim damages. That makes absolutely no sense to me. What we have here is an acknowledged overpayment. They should take care of what they acknowledge that has been overpaid. And then if we've got other issues, let's sit down, let's litigate them out if necessarily and get those figured out. If it's determined by this commission through the counterclaim that we owe money, we'll pay them the money when that amount's determined. But they shouldn't be able to use the fact that we have an argument over how to calculate inter-MTA as a sword to prevent them from having to refund money they've acknowledged they owe us. The third issue then is interest. The issue on interest is simply that in the answer, it appears they've taken the position that they can hold this money, credit it to us for months and months and months, but they don't owe us any interest. What I've asked the commission is not to determine the amount of the interest, just that if you have an overpayment, interest needs to be paid on those overpayments. And I've asked for that in a partial summary judgment. The amount of the interest I've not asked for to be determined today. I've not asked for you to calculate it. Simply that, look, if you're going to hold these funds, you have to pay interest on them. That interest is going to accumulate, and you're going to owe it. Those are the three issues. Specifically, I've submitted a brief on it with some of the legal analysis. I've summarized them here, but if there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer those.
Thank you. Tal, do you have anyone else to present at this time? Witness or anyone to present at this time?
I am not presenting the witness at this time.
All right, thank you. Darla Rogers, I believe, is here representing Golden West and the other companies.
Yes, good morning, members of the commission. As you stated, my name is Darla Pullman Rogers, and I represent Golden West companies in this docket. I will refer to all of the defendants or respondents as Golden West companies. We are here in resistance to WWC's motion for partial summary judgments for the following reasons. First of all, I would just like to give you a little bit or review a little bit the background of summary judgment motions for you. The standard is high for granting summary judgment motions. The evidence must be viewed in a light most favorable to the non-moving party. And if the commission is found or forced to engage in fact-finding to resolve a summary judgment motion or request, it should not grant the request. For a summary judgment motion to be granted, or it can be granted, only when it's shown that there is no room for controversy. In fact, it's such clarity that there is no room for controversy on any of the facts. Only in that instance is a summary judgment motion appropriate. And I would submit that in this case it is not. Western Wireless has not met that high standard. First of all, they failed to submit any supporting affidavits in this case, but have merely recited certain factual allegations in their pleadings and their motion and brief. Let's look first of all at the issue of jurisdiction. I think that if you look at all of the jurisdictional statutes and the case law that is out there, I'm not sure that summary judgment would ever lie, because I don't think that they are a model of clarity as to exactly what the commission does have a jurisdiction over. I don't think that, and we do not believe, that this commission has jurisdiction over all of the claims that Western Wireless is raising in this complaint. And since that is the case, I don't believe that summary judgment on this issue is proper. I believe that, as stated, this commission has jurisdiction to clarify or interpret the interconnection agreement. And in its brief, Western Wireless says that that's what they're seeking. On the other hand, if you view their pleadings and look at what they are asking for, and that also is not real clear, they're asking for an awfully lot more than just clarification of the interconnection agreement. They're asking for double damages. They're asking for attorney's fees. They claim that Golden West companies have been unjustly enriched at their expense. Unjust enrichment is an equitable claim. I do not believe the commission has jurisdiction over equitable claims. I believe that the statute specifically confers jurisdiction for double damages and attorney's fees on the court and not on this commission. Now, if Western Wireless wishes to amend its pleadings and eliminate all other claims and claim only clarification of this agreement, then the this motion with regard to jurisdiction may be appropriate. But that's not what has happened here, and therefore I think that the Commission should deny the motion for summary judgment on the issue of jurisdiction. Second of all, let's look at damages. I believe that you need to look at the pleadings as a whole, not just at the complaint that's been filed. Western Wireless is claiming damages on the reciprocal compensation rates under the agreement. Golden West companies are claiming damages for failure of Western Wireless to come forward and in good faith negotiate a methodology to adjust the inter-MTA factor. That has resulted in underpayment of access charges under the agreement. So those claims are both in the pleadings when you look at them as a whole. You have, and those claims involve factual determinations. You also have other factual issues, not just those two claims. You have the factual issue of the credits that have been given by Golden West Companies to WWC. You have, as I said, the offset to figure. You also have the factual determination of what is the appropriate method of adjusting these payments due from one party to the other. In fact, it's a little hard to imagine a case that would require any more factual determinations than the one that you have before you. Under South Dakota law, the full performance by both sides must occur before there can be a final determination of amounts due from one party to the other. A partial summary judgment on the issue of damages is not appropriate. This is demonstrated further by the affidavit of Denny Law that we have submitted in support of our resistance to the motion. That affidavit clearly sets forth factual disputes between the parties. In fact, in its own brief, Western Wireless says that they believe the actual amount of damages is higher than what was stated in Mr. Law's letter. Again, those are factual determinations that need to be made in a full hearing before the Commission. Western Wireless's assertion in its brief that the amount due is uncontroverted is incorrect. Any amounts due either party are in dispute, and thus summary judgment is not appropriate. And we would rely on the Butler Machinery case and other cases cited in our briefs. Not only is the amount of potential damages from one party to the other or vice versa in dispute, there is also dispute about the methodology of repayment by either party to the other, as the agreement is silent on this issue. These are, as I stated, issues that must be determined after a full hearing on the merits of the case. Finally, with regard to the issue of interest, I believe it's very similar to the issue of damages, and we would rely on the First National Bank case cited in our brief. When a party asserts an offset against a claim, interest cannot properly be awarded. Western Wireless has completely ignored the offset claim contained in Golden West pleadings. Furthermore, I don't believe at this point in the process you can determine a date certain upon which to calculate interest without further factual determinations. There must be a factual finding on Golden West's offset claim, and until that time, I don't believe the Commission can determine whether there is an amount actually owing, and if there is, by whom, and then the date that it would start. The Commission has the authority to determine the manner and methodology of payment, and that will also affect any claim of interest. Western Wireless's claim for interest predates its demand for payment, and I think the Commission needs to consider that fact as well. For these reasons, we would request that Western Wireless's motion for partial summary judgment be denied, because when you view the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, it clearly shows that there are genuine issues of material fact to be determined by the commission, and therefore summary judgment is not appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Darla. Do you have any other counsel representing the?
No.
Okay, thank you. Rolaine Wiest.
This is Rolaine Wiest representing commission staff. I'm going to the first issue in jurisdiction. Apparently, Golden West does agree the commission can interpret the party's obligations under the interconnection agreement. In its brief, however, Golden West questions whether the commission can enforce its offer through a refund. I believe that the commission's powers under 4913 are very strong and explicit. The Northwest Public Service gas case is not applicable. It's an electric case. Electric cases are not subject to 4913, the commission's complaint jurisdiction. Now, whether the commission will have the authority to award double damages or be able to apply 14.1 is something the commission will need to decide at a later date. But generally speaking, I think the commission could find that it has jurisdiction to go forward with its complaint under 4913 and under authority to settle disputes regarding interconnection agreements. With respect to the second issue on summary judgment for the undisputed amount, I believe that looking at the evidence most favorably to the non-moving party with reasonable doubt result against the moving party, I would recommend that the commission denied Western Wireless's request for summary judgment on this matter. Looking at what has been presented thus far, there appears to be too many unanswered questions that would allow the commission to come up with an exact amount. First, there's the issue of offset for interlateral MTA traffic that's been raised by Golden West. Second, the amount of overpayments is disputed. You know, in its brief, Western Wireless didn't even have a specific number. It just stated that it's entitled to overpayments in excess of $535,000. Now, today, I believe Mr. Wesor stated that they would take that amount and subtract the credits, but I would just note that I still haven't heard a specific number from Western Wireless on the undisputed amount. There's also the question at what point in time the overpayment should be calculated. If you look at the complaint, Western Wireless, in their complaint, they used paragraph 7.24 for the rate for late payments. And if they're relying on that paragraph, then the issue may become, when did Western Wireless give the Golden West companies a billing statement, since the provision provides that undisputed charges not paid within 30 days from the receipt of the billing statement may be subject to the late charge at the rate of 1.5% per month or the maximum amount allowed by law. Thus, I don't think that the commission is able to come up with an undisputed amount at this point in time. Going on to the third issue, such summary judgment and prejudgment interest, this probably is a little bit of a closer question, but I think that summary judgment should be denied on this issue also. Again, Western Wireless, in its complaint, it relied on Section 7.24, the one I just cited previously, for the calculation of interest due. Well, that section states that undisputed charges may be subject to a late charge. Moreover, is Western Wireless really asking for prejudgment interest? Is it asking for late payment charges on undisputed amounts? If the commission awards a late payment charges for undisputed amounts, is Western Wireless then allowed prejudgment interest? In addition, according to the case law submitted by Golden West Companies, prejudgment interest is allowable only when the exact amount of damage is known or readily ascertainable. Western Wireless may certainly be entitled to prejudgment interest, but I don't think we have sufficient facts to answer that question yet, and therefore I don't think it is an issue that should be decided on the basis of summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rolaine, Darla, and Tal. Are there any questions by the commissioners?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wazorek, you mentioned double damages and attorney's fees. In your brief, don't you think the statutes in South Dakota really make that clear that it's only for lawsuits and not for a hearing such as this or for a proceeding such as this?
Well, for the purpose of this motion, I wasn't asking for a determination on those damages. Commissioner, to determine you have jurisdiction, here's where I differ with Golden West's interpretation. When I asked for a determination of jurisdiction, I didn't ask for a determination of what damages were allowable, which are different things. I understand Golden West's argument that the statute talks about suit, and I haven't specifically briefed that issue. I understand their argument. It's our position that we can argue that this commission, when we make the election, can also give those damages. But it wasn't something we briefed specifically to ask you to determine we have today.
Thank you. On page 9 of the response to the motion, Golden West et al. Seems to suggest that because there is some ambiguity about what payment method could be used, that would be a question of material fact. Do you have a response to that?
Well, I don't see how you can have an ambiguity. If you make an overpayment on somebody, they're not entitled to that money. They would have to refute the fact that they need to refund that money. They'd have to point to something that allowed them to hold that money and use it for a year, and provide repayment some other method. Because in this situation, we've overpaid $500,000. They've acknowledged that, but they're just saying, well, we're just not going to give it back to you. We'll just give you credit. And essentially, they're saying, we get to keep your money, but we can't point to anything that allows us to keep it. It's just that that's how we're going to repay you. They've made that election. They have no right to make that election.
There has been raised on the staff side the question of, well, what number, you know, are we shooting for here? I mean, what is the request? What is the uncontested amount that you're putting forth, Mr. Resort?
Here's the position that I understand staff's position. Here's where I believe these amounts become undisputed. In Mr. Law's letter of December 1, he sets forth these are our minimum amounts, and our position is, look, we think we're entitled to more, but they shouldn't be able to hold back what they've admitted they owed us. In his letter, he admits that. My problem is I can never give you a full amount because every month they're giving us credits. So by the time I file my motion, by the time we have a hearing set, they've given us another credit. So my request today is not that you say, okay, give them this amount. Say, give me an order that says, look, you guys admitted an amount, Golden West companies, that you know you owed them on December 1, 2004. You've given them credits. So to the extent you haven't given them credits on those amounts, pay them that money. Both sides know what credits have been given during that time period, but every month we're getting new credits. So they've given us, since I filed my motion, we've gotten credits, I think, twice. So those amounts keep going down that they claim they owe us. But I think you can do an order today saying, pay them what you haven't given them credits for based on that letter, and then we'll figure out what the exact number is later if Western Wireless is entitled to more.
Couldn't some of those calculations constitute, you know, a question of fact?
Well, I don't think they really would because every month Golden West sends us a bill just showing us a credit. So it's their bill. Every month that number changes because they're sending us a new bill showing that they're not going to charge us for it because they've credited against the amount of money they've got of ours that they're holding.
The agreement had a statute of limitations. Does that have any effect on the dollar amounts that are owed?
I don't believe so. I don't believe it was raised in the brief as a counter. Also, the amounts we paid, there's two things going here. As overpayments, Golden West is correct that the agreement does not set forth, even discuss the overpayments. Because the overpayments were made, but the statute to me wouldn't have started to run until you actually knew what the overpayments were. And we've brought this matter, I think, in less than 2 years from when the overpayments began. Some of these overpayments were made less than a year ago.
Well, if the effective date is 1/1/03, and this was, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be a large amount. I mean, I think maybe we'd be talking about a month and a half, but I think you filed in the middle of February.
I think that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for Mr. Resort.
Commissioner Saar, do you have any questions?
No.
Commissioners, how do you wish to proceed? Is there a motion?
I have some questions for the other party, the respondents, if that's appropriate.
Go ahead.
Ms. Rogers, you indicate on page 4 of your response that the numbers provided in Dennis Law's letter are not factually correct, both as to amount and as to the non-inclusion of recalculated rates after adjustment of the inter-MTA factors. Could you explain that to me a bit?
Yes, I believe that Mr. Law's letter was an attempt to explain what Golden West was going to be crediting on a go-forward basis. However, the letter does not address and specifically did not waive any contractual rights that the Golden West companies have with regard to the inter-NTA factor. That is clearly part of the same contract, Commissioner. And what has happened here is that the contract requires the parties to negotiate in good faith a methodology to adjust the default inter-MTA factor that was set in the statute, and that was to be done within, I think it was 60 or 90 days from the date that the agreement was signed. Instead of coming to the table and negotiating with us on the inter-MTA factor and coming up with a methodology to effectuate that adjustment, Western Wireless has failed to do that. And until we get some type of records from them so that we can figure that adjustment ourselves, it's hard to determine the exact amount. And therefore, the letter does not address that, but that does not mean that those monies are equally due and owing to what Golden West companies. And that's what I'm referring to in that portion of the brief.
In your response to the brief, you refer to Carlson versus First National Bank and suggest that that case would indicate that even if jurisdiction does exist, that summary judgment cannot be entered as to damages. And yet, in that case, in Section 2, Subsection 3, it says there is no dispute that Carlson's executed the promissory notes. As to the amount of debt owed, pleadings and testimony verify that $75,000 plus accrued interest was borrowed. The only amount subject to dispute is $6,000 plus interest. That amount is a defense to bank's counterclaim, and the trial court properly denied a directed verdict as to that amount because the liability of that debt is disputed. However, as to $68,000 plus accrued interest, there is no dispute. And then the court awards the $68,000. Is this analogous to the current situation where there may be an amount that is undisputed, but then these counterclaims or offsets would be something the commission would handle later on?
No, not exactly, Commissioner, because I do not believe that there are uncontroverted or undisputed amounts. And I think even as the argument today has indicated, it is not possible to even calculate or figure out who owes whom what without further factual determinations for any portion of the pleadings.
But certainly Golden West et al. Acknowledges that a debt is owed.
There are some sums that we have been crediting. Yes, that is correct. Are those amounts certain that we can come in here and say this is it? No, they're not. There are certainly factual determinations, including our offset claim, which Western Wireless seems to ignore.
Why did your clients feel that they had, the unilateral power to determine in what method those debts would be repaid?
The contract is silent with regard to the methodology or manner of repayment, either way, by either party to the other. And I disagree with Western Wireless's interpretation that we would have to have a specific authority to do an offset or a credit. I think those things are done all the time under agreements. But the agreement is silent, and therefore I don't believe that we have violated or breached anything under the agreement by proceeding with the credits as we've done.
My final question deals with, on page 2 of your response, you seem to suggest that the PUC's order should have been more robust in clarifying those areas that the agreement was silent, specifically the manner to which the respective parties should receive their compensation. To me, that seems to, I mean, if you carry that a little further, you're suggesting that PUC orders should be, you know, expansive, that should cover, you know, a variety of areas to clarify their jurisdiction, to, you know, essentially address all areas which an agreement is silent. Do you really think that's appropriate?
The point that I was trying to make there, Commissioner, is just the fact that the agreement is silent. I did not mean to imply that every order is going to cover everything, because, of course, that can't happen. That's one of the reasons that we're here today. But the point was that the agreement is silent. That's not a settled issue under the contract or the agreement or the order as written.
Thanks, Ms. Rogers. Mr. Chairman, those are all the questions I have, although if General Counsel has any questions, I'd certainly be interested in hearing them.
I have one question of Rolaine first. Rolaine, do you believe that the Commission has jurisdiction on all issues?
I think that the Commission could find, as a general matter, it has jurisdiction over general jurisdiction to decide these matters. I would agree with Mr. Wazorik with respect to the applicability of 49.13.14.1. The Commission can decide that within the confines of this case, but you don't have to make a decision on that right now. But you do have the jurisdiction to go forward with this complaint.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Smith, do you have some questions?
I do. I think maybe starting with Ms. Rogers, isn't it true in South Dakota that the determination of whether or not a contract is ambiguous is a question of law? I have a case that says that.
I was going to say, is this a trick question?
No, it's not. It's the case is Orion Financial. It's actually a federal district court case construing South Dakota.
The Orion case?
Right, Orion.
And we've referred to that. I don't know that our claim is necessarily that the agreement is ambiguous. I think our counterclaim deals with, and our whole point here today is that there are genuine issues of material fact outstanding, and therefore a summary judgment motion on the issues raised by Western Wireless is not appropriate.
Would you also agree with me that interpretation of a contract is purely a question of law in South Dakota? If there is no ambiguity, if the Commission were to find that the agreement is not ambiguous.
Is the interpretation of a contract a matter of law?
Is that a question of law or a question of fact? My reading of the case law would just indicate point blank that it's a question of law.
Again,
where there's no ambiguity.
Providing that there is not ambiguity and providing that if the only issue before the court or the commission is an interpretation of the contract as opposed to all of the factual issues that are included in the case in the current docket.
Thank you. Some recent holdings of the South Dakota Supreme Court have very strongly asserted that prejudgment interest, at least statutory prejudgment interest, is always payable on a damage award. Is that not true?
Have the cases stated that? Is that your mm-hmm. question to me? I think there is case law to that effect. I do not think it's necessarily applicable in this case, and I think we've tried to point out those distinctions in our brief.
And maybe you could explain why you don't think that's applicable. If the commission, let me point you to section 49.13.14. Would it be your position that the order of the commission to the telecommunications company to pay such person, would it be your argument then that that's not an award of damages? Is that the argument?
I'm sorry, I don't have that particular statutory section in front of me, but thank you. You're referring to?
Section 14.
I think my understanding of that statutory section is that the commission must first make a determination of the extent of damages, which would necessarily be a factual determination. If and when or once that determination is made, then the commission can take appropriate action with regard to any interest. But I think that there must be that factual determination. And in this case, because of all the ambiguities with regard to the dates and everything under the agreement, I don't believe that that can be determined without further factual findings by the commission.
Well, as I understand Mr. Wazorik's, what he's asking for a summary judgment on, and I guess I'm not quite sure as to the motivation for it, but he's not requesting that the commission determine what the interest amount is. He's merely requesting that the commission make a ruling that prejudgment interest will be due and payable under the statute.
That
or under the contractual penalty provision. I guess not penalty provision, but interest provision.
Well, I believe that the cases that we've cited in our brief do support the position that there does have to be a date certain, and I don't think that that is at all easy. And the other question is, at this stage, I don't believe this commission is capable, based on the facts in front of it now, to determine who is going to owe whom money at the end of the day.
Well, and if the commission were to make such a ruling regarding interest, it would be applicable. Any damages award, interest on any damages award running in either direction, that ruling would apply to both parties, would it not? If it were based on at least statutory prejudgment.
I would say that it would depend on how the commission enters its order. But certainly, if there is going to be an order, it should go both ways, because at this point, I don't believe we're capable of determining who is going to owe who money at the end of the day. I guess that's another reason why I think that there is no pressing need to grant summary judgment on that issue.
With respect to jurisdiction, you've pointed out some potential statutory conflicts and so forth. What issues of fact in this case are in dispute which would affect the issue of whether the commission has jurisdiction or not? Issues of fact that will affect that determination.
The issues of fact concerning damages and the issues of
fact. I'm not talking about damages. I'm just talking about jurisdiction.
But the factual issues surrounding damages, if they extend beyond what I construe to be the statutory authority for this commission to consider damages, for example, double damages, that would be a factual dispute. I don't believe that the commission has jurisdiction over that.
But the issue of whether or not the commission has jurisdiction or ultimately has authority to issue that award has nothing to do with the facts of this case, does it? It's strictly a matter of interpretation of the law.
Interpretation of the statutes and the case law, but necessarily in interpreting or looking at the rights of parties under a contract, I believe that there are often factual issues that come to play on that. I think it's hard to draw a line in the sand and say, never will these spill over one into the other.
I guess just one, it's just a general matter, and again, I realize the contract does not talk about overpayment and does not include a mechanism for refund of overpayment, but just from the point of view of common rules of equity, if you want to call it that, or business fairness here, I mean, we're talking a significant sum of money, and what is it that makes the Golden West companies think they can hang on to $500,000 of somebody else's money for years and just keep it in their bank account?
Mr. Smith, under the facts and the circumstances in this case, and I think this will be disclosed if we indeed proceed to the merits, we were unable to get Western Wireless to come to the table at all to negotiate the inter-MTA factor and adjustment of that. And I don't believe we would even be there in any kind of negotiations today had we just paid over the balance due. So that was one of the reasons, and the other is, as you say, there was nothing in the contract that requires that. And in our business, oftentimes we do offsets and true-ups and things like that, so it's not uncommon, an uncommon practice.
Okay, thank you. I have a couple questions for Mr. Wazarek, too, I think, here. Your motion does not request in any way, shape, or form double damages, attorney's fees, or anything like that, does it?
As to jurisdiction and damages, at least as I've always understand the law, are separate things. Jurisdiction, do you have the jurisdiction to hear the case? Damages, you know, do you have the legal authority to award certain damages? And so what I want is a clear determination that the commission has the jurisdiction to hear the claims presented. I'm not asking you to make a determination of damages, because if you determine you do not have jurisdiction, then I need to get into circuit court and go pursuant to this claim. See, the difficulty in this has arisen out of the fact that the reason the overpayments aren't mentioned is they're not just talked about at all in the contract. Since Ms. Rogers has kind of gone into some of the past, I guess I'll take the same liberty, and that is when these claims were originally, this overpayment request was originally made, there was an assertion, and I believe it was before Ms. Rogers came on, that our overpayments had nothing to do with the interconnection agreement because they were made separate and apart and not part of the interconnection agreement per se. So my concern is that I get into a situation, and that was one of the reasons why I framed this as a complaint under 4913, is that I'd get in a situation that that Golden West could assert, well, that's not part of the interconnection agreement, so you can't bring it as a request for clarification under the interconnection agreement. And so I want to make sure that this commission is comfortable that it has jurisdiction to make a determination to refund these overpayments or to make a determination of how the overpayment should be handled, even if they're separate and apart from that interconnection agreement. As to the damages, I didn't get into those at this point. The extent I did get into damages, given the fact that they've admitted an amount owed, I've asked that the amount they've admitted they owe, they should pay. This inter-MTA issue, I do take exception with how it's been phrased. Western Wireless has made offers on this last fall of how to calculate inter-MTA, and there's been offers going back and forth in negotiations. It's not an easy thing to calculate, but there's been counteroffers going back and forth since last fall. So this isn't something where we just turned a blind eye to those requests. It's something that there's been a lot of work on both sides to try to come up with a way to calculate. And to the extent that now they're sitting here saying, we don't have to give you this money until you come up with an agreement that we find acceptable under inter-MTA, I mean, they're holding our money hostage. And that's what that's what the issues, one, the jurisdiction issue, two, the damages, was say, look, to the extent that they agree they owe us money, to the extent of the money they agree they owe us, they should pay it, and they shouldn't be able to use it as leverage under an inter-MTA argument. So I hope that answers your question.
With respect to the interest determination, just to clarify, is your motion directed solely at statutory prejudgment interest under
21.1.13.1? Yeah, it is, and here's why. It goes back to that analysis where, if the overpayment are not subject to the interconnection agreement, I want a determination that I'm entitled to prejudgment interest for a couple of reasons. I don't want to get caught in this argument where, the overpayments aren't addressed in the interconnection agreement, so they're not part of the interconnection agreement, so you're not entitled to interest, which I don't think is appropriate. And they have raised, at least I believed in their answer, they basically raised the position that you can't give me interest. And I want that issue determined, and I think that's an important issue to determine because it's going to make, you know, in all frankness, it'll make a determination on how we want to proceed going forward potentially with other claims.
Okay, I think that's about it. And basically, do you agree, Mr. Wieczorek, that the Commission cannot right now determine a specific dollar amount that would be doing and owing to Western Wireless?
I agree that the Commission cannot make a determination of the amount we claim we're due and owing. I also believe, though, that this Commission could order, to the extent Golden West has acknowledged the amount due and owing, less any credits they might have given, they should pay us that amount immediately. They could enter an order as to that.
And would you be asking then for just a, what would it be, like a qualitative verbal
order
statement?
To read, to the extent that Golden West and affiliated companies pursuant to Exhibit C of the complaint have agreed to amount owed, they should pay that less any credits they've given since that letter was written against those amounts. Period. That's an easy quantitative amount. As I said, we keep getting credits every month, so that's a moving target. But that's a money of ours that they've acknowledged that they've got, and they've taken the position we can just credit it against the amount owed as you go forward. And they don't have any authority to do that. This argument that the agreement is silent, well, there are set-offs done in this industry, but it's amount that people know. If I owe you $5 this month and that you owe me 10, they give me 5. Fine, but those are discernible amounts. Here, they don't have, all they have is an argument they might be entitled to set-off, so they're saying they get to keep $500,000. And that's inappropriate. The money should be paid. And on the flip side, if it comes back in the end, and under InterMTA, you say, well, you owe InterMTA of this amount, and it goes back 2 months, and you know, under the agreement, we'd owe interest under that. So I think that's the appropriate way to proceed.
I just have one last question then, Mr. Wieczorek. Are you suggesting then the order we would issue, if the Commission were to issue an order relative to the quote, undisputed damages amount, would it be your view then that would be at least a partial final order in the case that would trigger appeals and we would go down that track with respect to that particular component of the case?
Generally, procedurally, partial summary judgment does not trigger an appeal unless, and the appropriate, circuit court rule is the Rule 54 determination is made that it's final and conclusory of all that specific issue. And that's the discretion of the, generally, and I'm not familiar with a similar administrative rule, but generally, unless you say this is a final determination on this issue and make that specific finding in your order, it doesn't begin the running of the time of the appeal.
And we wouldn't be able to do that here because Western Wireless, is it not, would be reserving a right to have additional damages related to that precise claim awarded following a factual determination.
That would be true.
Thank you.
Ms. Wieczorek, just out of curiosity, this is Gary Hansen. Are you aware if there is a balance shown on a monthly basis or whatever when the credit is given, or is there just a line that states that a credit is given?
I believe they just show that it's credited and they're not providing what's left on the amount. I'd have to double check that. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you, Commissioner. I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you. Are there any further questions by the commissioners?
Chairman Hansen, I have a comment and question for perhaps Mr. Smith. lot of times we can kind of go round and round on some of these issues, and we're oftentimes better off just moving the hearing and being able to resolve it all as one piece and parcel. Do you have any feel for how quickly we can set this matter for hearing and try to have a trying to take care of all these things at once? Just kind of curious to see what your thoughts are on that.
I think it's totally appropriate for the commission to determine its own jurisdiction, because I don't think there are any facts in dispute that will affect our jurisdiction. I think that's a legal issue, and frankly, if we determine we don't have jurisdiction, I agree with Western Wireless that we ought to boot the case so they can move on to an appropriate forum. With respect to scheduling, which I think, Commissioner Saar, is where you're going with this, I think I'm going to have to defer to the administrative staff probably, because I don't have the foggiest idea when we could. I don't know where the parties are at with discovery either, and maybe Bob, would you want to request of the attorneys where they are with discovery and what the discovery process might look like?
Well, and maybe as much a comment as anything. We've got a number of issues here that we're discussing, and I think both parties raised some very good issues through their pleadings. You know, at the same time, I think if we move this thing fairly quickly to hearing, we can get a lot of this resolved at that level. So I would encourage the parties and staff to look to see if we can't go forward and move towards getting this thing set, try to get some of these things resolved, sooner rather than later. And we can have a lot of motions hearings, but sometimes you're just better off getting into the actual hearing and getting it resolved once and for all in that setting, as opposed to parsing things.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have a motion in regards that I think has been followed from the standpoint of the information here, and I'll at least float it. Because of the ambiguities on the amount and the questions on the amount and the fact that interest needs to be determined by those amounts, I have concern that we can't make a decision on those at this time, but it certainly appears that, at least from the discussion, that we should be able to have jurisdiction over this matter. I will move that we grant WWC's motion for partial summary judgment with respect to the issue of jurisdiction and determine that the commission does have jurisdiction to hear the case. None of the disputed issues of fact in this case affect whether the commission has jurisdiction or not, and certainly under SDCL Chapter 4913, seems on, at least on the face, that the commission does have the authority to hear the complaint. I also move that with respect to the issues of summary disposition for a determination that prejudgment interest must be awarded and of the overpayments made by WWC, that we take this matter under advisement to consider the information presented today and the arguments by the counsel so that we would not give summary judgment on those two matters.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Saar. I would, again, I just want to make sure, are you done with your motion?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, great. And I would second that motion. And I also would just add the caveat that if there are some payments due that are not disputed that are not, likely to be subject to offset of a like amount, I would encourage the parties to try to resolve that and not be holding anybody's money, except to the extent that I think is a legitimate question of offset. And again, I hope we can, move this matter hearing quickly and get this resolved, sooner rather than later. But with that, I would second the motion.
I think the, commission's jurisdiction is clear and unambiguous and would, consent.
Motion carries. Under electricity item EL05-006, in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of tariff revisions. The question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? Unless any of the commissioners desire to ask any questions at this point, I have a motion. Do any of the commissioners have any further discussion or questions relating to this matter?
Do not, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just note that the parties and the commissioners did receive a packet of information from staff analyst Dave Jacobson, and I think the commissioners have reviewed that information. So if Dave or anybody else would want to make any brief comments on that material, that may be appropriate.
Hello?
Who has joined us? Who has just said hello?
This is DOED. Do we have the right call?
You're with the Public Utilities Commission meeting.
Okay, never mind. Good luck.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson.
The information I sent out was merely the flexible and contractor deviation tariff information that's on file with the commission.
Thank you very much. I will move at this time that the commission deny the tariff revisions.
And I will second.
I would dissent.
Motion carries. The next item is EL05-015. Before we get to that item, I would like to state that we received a pressing email message from Jim and Annie Melhoff. This is Jim's writing. I'm sure he's quite excited. He states, "Good morning. The biscuit has arrived. Annie went into surgery at 8 a.m. this morning, and shortly after at 8:32, we got to meet Mary Donna Frances Melhoff. She weighed in at 7 pounds, 13 ounces, and is 19 inches long. Thank you all for your thoughts and prayers. This is not classified information, so feel free to pass this along to other interested parties. Love, Jim, Annie, Bryce, and Mary." So congratulations, Jim and Annie and family, and very happy for you. EL05-015 in the matter of the filing by Ottertail Power Company for approval of tariff revisions. The question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? David Jacobson.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ron Spangler's on the phone, but I think he's probably for the next docket, not for this docket. This is simply cleaning up a contractor deviation with the town of Astoria that will expire on June 1st. The city will now be served on regular tariff rates, and this just cleans up the Section 4 tariff list of contracts and deviations.
Thank you, Dave. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on this item? Commission questions? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the commission approve the tariff revisions.
I will second.
And I concur.
EL05-016 in the matter of the filing by Ottertail Corporation doing business as Ottertail Power Company for approval of revisions of its fuel adjustment clause calculation and tariff. Question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve the revisions to the fuel adjustment clause calculation and tariff? Dave?
Mr. Spangler, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I don't know if I necessarily have any opening comments at this time. I guess I just kind of wanted to make myself available if you had any questions for us regarding this item.
Thank you, Mr. Spangler. Do the commissioners have any questions?
I have none.
Dave, did you have something you needed to present on it?
Well, the filing is self-explanatory. They want to go from a mid-month billing cycle to a calendar month. It's already been performed in other jurisdictions. It should lead to administrative efficiency. There also was a change in the calculation that takes place within the fuel adjustment clause. The company discovered that some one volume measurement did not match with another volume measurement, and by correcting it, it will now make it, it'll correct the error that did exist in that calculation. So staff would recommend approval of it.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions at all? If not, is there a motion on item 3?
Mr. Chair, I would move that the commission approve the revisions to the fuel adjustment clause calculation and the tariff.
I will second.
And I concur.
Telecommunications TC05-001 in the matter of the application of Phone One, Inc. for a certificate of authority to provide alternative operator services in South Dakota. The question is, shall the commission grant the COA? Mr. Sanger.
Yes, on January 13th, this company filed for an application for a certificate of authority to provide interexchange services and alternative operator services throughout South Dakota. The applicant has requested waivers from ARSD 2010-2402 Part 8 and from 2010-2405 Part 6 and 11. The applicant has agreed to restrictions from offering any prepaid services or for collecting customer deposits and advance payments. I'd recommend the commission grant the waivers and grant the waiver requests and issue Phone 1 a certificate of authority for interexchange and AOS authority, subject to the restrictions.
Any questions by the commission? If not, I will move that the commission grant the certificate of authority according to the staff's recommendations.
Second.
And I concur.
On item number 2 is TC05-023 in the matter of the filing for approval of a master services agreement between Quest Corporation and Visera Communications Incorporated. Question before the commission is, shall the commission disapprove the master services agreement? Sarah Gruff.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Visera in this case has Quest Corporation, I think, filed the master services agreement. They were prematurely filed because Visera does not have a certificate of authority with the commission at this time. Visera had indicated that they were going to file a certificate of authority with the commission. However, after waiting some time and contacting them again, they have indicated that they're not going to do that at this time. So staff would recommend disapproval of the agreement.
Thank you. Questions?
Ms. Greff, did Visera give any indication for their reason for not wanting a COA?
They are not ready to start business in South, or moving business into South Dakota yet at this time. They're not ready to do it.
Okay, thank you.
Quest, you are on the phone. Do you have anything to add?
Chairman, this is Melissa Thompson. No, we don't.
Thank you. Is there a motion? I will make a motion then to disapprove the master services agreement.
I concur.
Item number 3 is TC05-029 in the matter of the filing for approval of terms and conditions for interconnection, unbundled network elements, ancillary services, and resale of telecommunication services between Quest Corporation and Visera Communications. Question for the commission is, shall the commission disapprove the terms and conditions of interconnection, UNE, ancillary services, and resale of telecommunication services? Sarah.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Again, this is much like the previous docket. Quest prematurely filed this this agreement on behalf of Visera, and Visera does not have a COA and is not planning on coming into South Dakota and getting one. So staff would recommend disapproval of this agreement as well.
Thank you. And Quest, do you have anything on this item that you wish to add?
Mr. Chairman, this is Melissa Thompson again. No, we don't. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we disapprove the terms and conditions for interconnection, unbundled network elements, ancillary services, and resale of telecommunication services.
I will second.
And I will concur. Item number 4 is TC05-053 in the matter of the application of Global Tellink Corporation for a certificate of authority to provide payphone operator services and inter-exchange telecommunication services in South Dakota. Question before the commission is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority to Global Tellink Corporation? Mr. Sanger.
On March 18th of 2005, Global Tellink Corporation filed an application for certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services and alternative operator services throughout South Dakota. They intend to provide payphone telephone services at public and correctional facility locations. The applicant has requested waivers of ARSD 2010-2405 Parts 6 and 7 because these services are not required at correctional facilities. The applicant has provided a $25,000 bond. With that, I would recommend the commission grant the waiver and grant Global Tellink Corporation an inter-exchange and AOS authority subject to the bond requirements.
Is there a motion or any questions, rather? Seeing none, I will make a motion that the Commission grant a certificate of authority to Global Tellink Corporation according to staff's recommendations.
I will second.
Concur.
TC05-057 in the matter of the petition of McLeod USA Telecommunications Services, Inc. for enforcement of interconnection agreement with Quest Corporation. The question before the Commission today is, shall the Commission grant the stipulation for dismissal?
Good morning, Commissioners and staff. Brett Kanicki from Peer representing McLeod USA. I'm informed that there's an agreement between the parties as to the matters contained in the docket. We've entered into a stipulation with Quest that the docket can be dismissed and closed, and we'd ask that you do that this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions by the Commissioners? Quest, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chairman, this is Melissa Thompson. No, we concur with Mr. Kennedy's comment.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, I will move that the Commission grant the stipulation for dismissal.
Second.
And I concur.
Item number 6 is TC05-059. Today, shall the Commission grant intervention to the South Dakota Telecommunications Association in the matter of the application of the Pacific Centric Services Incorporated for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, staff. My name is Richard Coit, and I'm appearing today for SDTA. We have asked for intervention in this case. Pacific Centrex Services is asking for not only inter-exchange service authority, but also local service authority. And looking at their application, it's not, I guess, all that clear what their service plans are in rural areas. The application, though, is not currently, by its language, limited to Quest areas. There's nothing in their application as to how they would go about, if they truly intend to serve rural areas, how they would go about meeting some of the universal service requirements or the requirements to provide service throughout the areas. In addition to that, I have been informed that they have not filed the requisite notice in the rules. They are supposed to provide notice of their filing to all ILECs, all independent or incumbent local exchange carriers, and they have not done that, to my knowledge, from what I've heard from our members. We feel we have an interest in this case. We would like intervention.
Thank you. Sarah?
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Staff would agree that we have no opposition to intervention by SDTA. The application in this case was poorly filed. It is very unclear as to where this company wants to have service in South Dakota. A data request was sent out to them April 26, 2005, asking them to be more specific and follow the guidelines as prescribed in ARSD 2010-3203. So hopefully this will take care of the problem, but we have no opposition to SCTA coming in.
Thank you, Ms. Graff. Any questions by the Commissioners? And is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that the Commission grant intervention to SDTA.
I will second.
And I concur.
Thank you.
Last item under administration. Question is, today shall the Commission establish the gross receipts tax rate levy for the 2006 fiscal year and assess the gross receipts tax as authorized in South Dakota Codified Law 49-1A-3. Ms. Forney.
Good morning, Commissioner. The gross receipts tax is the method with which we fund the fixed utilities portion of the Public Utilities Commission. And by statute, on April 1st of each year, all utilities and telecommunication companies doing business in South Dakota shall file with the Commission its gross receipts derived from customers within South Dakota during the preceding calendar year. Based on that information, I determine the assessment and the commission is to establish the rate and assess that tax as authorized under SDCL 49183. In accordance with 49185, the tax is due and payable on July 15th of each year. We've finally received the majority of the gross intrastate revenue reports from the companies doing business in South Dakota. And based on their information, I would recommend assessing the maximum levy that's possible, the .0015, with the $250 minimum. We're anticipating that'll give us a projected revenue for fiscal year 06 of roughly $1.5 million.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, is there a motion? I will move then that the Commission establish the rate and assess the gross receipts tax as authorized in South Dakota Codified Law 49-1A-3 in the amounts that were just recommended by staff.
Mr. Chair, I'll second.
And I concur.
Thank you all very much for joining us today. The next regularly scheduled Commission meeting will be held June 14th. 2005. We have commission meetings scheduled for June 28th and July 12th. We will be closed on Memorial Day, May 30th, and commission has scheduled an instructional presentation on regional transmission organizations to begin June 28th, 2005. It will be held at 1:30 to 5 p.m. It will continue on June 29th, 2005 from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. and it will be held here in room 412 in the state capitol in Pierce, South Dakota. Again, congratulations to Jim, Annie, Bryce, and Mary. Thanks again for joining us.